Happy Wednesday, my friends! Hope all you out there are having a really fantastic week. It's May 6th, 2020. My name is Sean Oshadi, and yes, oh yes, this is the Man of the Myth podcast here on The Athletic. Welcome back to the show, y'all. It's fight week. We appreciate you guys. Hope you're out there staying safe. Hope everyone is well. We got producer Chris here, of course, on the ones and twos, and with me as always. It's a big day today. We haven't done one of these in a while, so I'm happy to bring him in. He is my guy. He is my East Coast spirit animal. He is the Platinum Perry of the MMA media. And he's also the best damn writer in the game. He's the myth and the goat and the man in the hat. He's Chuck Mendenhall. Are you ready for this one today, Chuck?
I was until I got called Platinum Perry of the media. Now I'm confused, man. But I think that's a compliment.
It could be a little bit of both, you know? A little bit of... Yeah, a little bit of shade, a little compliment to start you off, get you on tilt. You don't really know which way you're going, kind of.
Yeah, I'm with you. Sean, let me ask you this before we get started, man.
What's up?
You've been watching The Last Dance, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. What do you think? Do you remember back to very young Sean when you hear the story of Jordan boarding the plane to Phoenix, and he shows up and he just brings one suit and he gives that spiel? He says, "I only brought one suit because we're going to finish this thing." Did you see that part?
Okay, I deserved this. I can't even.
I just want to know. I wanted to know what that's like because the Denver Nuggets have never even made the finals. But I was like, that must, like, you see that. What does it make you think, man?
It doesn't feel good, Chuck. Doesn't feel good, Chuck.
All right.
Don't. Here's a tip. Don't make the finals. It's easier.
I just think of you, God, man, every time I see stuff like that. So I just thought I'd get that off my chest right away. But yeah, man, fight week, baby.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad you could start the show like that, Chuck. That really, really makes me feel good. God damn.
Sorry,
fight week,
man.
Chuck. Fight week. There's important things to talk about.
All right, let's get it. We can do that. Let's do the fight week stuff.
Do you remember how to do these? I don't even bear, like, this is
not really.
This feels all brand new to me. This is
no,
crazy.
No, not really, man. And not with any sense of real purpose and like it's going to happen, right? Like it feels certain. So I feel like that's the first step towards this. So it feels like it's going to happen.
Yeah. Hey, man, you said it. UFC 249. That is everything today's show is going to be about. We are deep diving into this pay-per-view card for UFC 249. Fights are back, y'all. Fights are back. And it is an exciting event, to say the least. If you missed it, we deep dived into the undercard on Monday. We made all of our picks for the undercard, made our lock of the night on the undercard, and then we actually talked to Trevor Whitman too, the longtime coach of Justin Gaethje. So if you missed that, tune in to Monday's show, and we're going to dive into it, guys. Before we really get too deep into it, though, one quick housekeeping note. You guys remember how back in the day when we used to have fights, sometimes for the bigger cards, we used to do those things right afterwards. It was like these mini shows. It's been so long, I can't remember what they're called.
Post-fight show.
Well, I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing this out there. But what do you guys think about doing that again on Saturday, just for old time's sake?
Oh, man. That's a nostalgic undertale. Yes, I'm down for that, man. That would be fun to revisit something like that.
Yeah, you know what? I'm into it. I think we should do it.
I love it. Let's do that again, just for old time's sake, and just because maybe let's make it free, just because the people have supported us throughout this entire process of the pandemic, and we appreciate it. So we gotta help out the people, you know.
The great thing is, Sean, neither one of us will have to be there, and we don't have to figure out where to tape this thing or anything like that.
True,
we're in the comfort of our own homes. This is gonna be perfect.
Oh yes, it's back. The post fight show is back. Tune in Saturday immediately after the fights. We're going to record. So that show should come up probably like an hour after the fights. Instant reaction, instant thoughts as all of the craziness unfolds. I'm sure at that point, considering the main event, we are going to be deep, deep into the full body sweats at that point, getting some kind of meat sweat going on or something with all the excitement. But please tune into that Saturday. The post fight show is back. Also, rate, review, subscribe the show on Apple Podcasts. It really does help us out. One last thing, Chris, I believe there might be a promo code that you could tell the people about.
Yeah, there is a promo code for sure. Our promo code, if you go to theathletic.com/MATM, which obviously stands for Man in the Myth, you can get 40% off an annual subscription to The Athletic, get access to all the content on there, and people can see the higher ups at the company go, wow, these people really love the Man in the Myth. They use their code. You get 40% off, and we really appreciate it, and it shows you guys are listening to the show. So theathletic.com/MATM, 40% off an annual subscription.
That's a great deal. That's a great deal. I actually just wrote a big piece about Tony Ferguson, deep diving into talking to old opponents, past teammates, things like that. A lot of good nuggets in that story. I know, Chuck, you just wrote a killer story on Dominic Cruz, too. If you want to read that.
More of a shallow dive, but yes, I did. Thank you, sir.
I like the idea of a shallow dive. If you guys want to read that, 40% off, use our code. It'll help us out. And there we go. That's all the salesmanship out of the way. Let's get into these fights, y'all.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's start here. Big picture, before we even get into anything. UFC 249, this is now the fourth pay-per-view of the year. It doesn't even feel like the same year. I'm not going to lie. The time moves in a very strange way now. But this is the fourth pay-per-view of the year. We had McGregor, Cowboy, Jones, Reyes, Adesanya, Romero, and now this. Obviously, this is a much different circumstance, and I think we would all agree this is easily the best card out of any of those four. This is the best card of the year. This is going to happen, right? Like, we're in too deep at this point, right? Like, this is going to happen, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that's what feels different, right? Like, it's like, it feels like it's happening, and I know it is. I mean, obviously, the fighters are all showing up. You see them getting their corona tests, man, with those swabs up their nose and everything. It's just,
dude, that looks
this thing's going off. And I got to say, man, I mean, I through this process, and it's crazy because you were just mentioning it feels like it's been a year since a pay-per-view. UFC 248 was in early March. I know you were there, Sean. It does. It feels like that was so long. It feels like we've lived lifetimes through this sport. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's bizarre that it's been 2 months. We've undergone so much change in the sport, but yet here they are pulling it off. And kudos. Honestly, man, I've been very critical. I know a lot of people have about the process, everything else, but the UFC has just remained very resilient in getting this thing done. And I believe I did. Isn't Dana even on the cover of Sports Illustrated this week? I think I saw that somewhere.
I don't know if that was the cover, the true cover, or like the daily cover that they
do.
Yeah,
I never know anymore, to be honest. I haven't subscribed in a long time. But either way, same. I'm just saying, like, it's crazy that the UFC has returned, basically doing what they said they're going to do, being first in terms of showing up and getting this thing done. So kudos to them, man. You know what I mean? That's total resiliency on Dana White and the UFC's side of it.
I agree with you 100%. I almost caution to throw the kudos too much because we're not there yet, right? Like, I don't want to jinx it. Also, you don't know sort of what can happen after this, the aftermath of it. What if some people come away getting affected? There's a lot of still questions up in the air. So I don't want to become too early with it. But man, you look at this card. We're going to be looking at this card all day, and it is just such a damn good card. As I said, probably the best card of 2020 so far. Is this the best card on paper since UFC 200?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, look at it. We broke down the prelim card. We spent the whole show on Monday breaking down the prelim card. There were, and if I recall right, there were three or four champions on the prelims alone.
We could have done a double length show on that. Like, we could have gone much longer if we wanted to.
For sure. And so many of these fights have very intriguing hooks about them, maybe stylistically or career-wise, where guys are just kind of at the verge of maybe falling into, you know, a situation where they don't belong in the UFC anymore, like legends of the game. There's a lot of great storylines, a lot of big names, former champions and current champions, two title fights, plus a heavyweight fight that was supposed to, you know, headline a couple of different shows. But I've been looking forward to this fight for the last few months between Francis Ngannou and Rozenstrike. It has something for everybody, man. I in terms of star power, in terms of, you know, these fighters and their intrigue and the storylines, yes, I think that this is the best card.
Yeah, it doesn't get much bigger than this. And it's wild when you think that Amanda Nunes was supposed to be defending her belt on this and had to pull out, a few weeks ago. But
Rose
Namajunas
as well versus Jessica Andrade.
That's right. This is as deep as it gets, and this has the makings of an all timer. You know, if everything stays intact and these fights go the way we think they are.
To me, UFC 217 stands out as the one you can maybe point to as like, hey, this was a good card too. But up, you look up and down that card, it doesn't even touch this in terms of the undercard and things like this. This to me is easily the deepest card we have gotten since UFC 200. The circumstances are going to be certainly weird. We've already started to see sort of how this is playing out in Jacksonville over the course of this week. All the testing that's going on, all sort of the isolation, the social distancing, the different protocols for cutting weight and things like that. I wonder, though. I mean, we have, these past few weeks have been interesting to just sort of see from a sports media landscape, because we've seen things like Korean baseball. And this Jordan documentary, really just sports content of any kind that can really just kind of take over the landscape right now, because there's just people out there who are starving for it. Like, there was legitimate conversations about the Korean baseball league. Like, people who were watching this. Do you guys think that, given the current climate and given the fact that on Saturday, the world will be the UFC's to own, or at least the sports world, will this be more attention than we've really ever gotten for like a non-Connor type of card? Or do you think this is not going to translate? Because I thought this initially with the UFC Brasilia a month ago, and that ended up being the lowest rated event that they had done on ESPN. So I just guess I don't have my finger on the pulse of, are people into this? Or is it just going to kind of come and go and do another UFC Brasilia?
It's a very good question. I tend to think that the Brasilia one, it felt in such defiance with what was going on around it that it was almost, it felt so out of place to even be going on. This particular one, obviously, is the first strike back, you know, where it's like, you know, somebody's trying to get going and, you know, these storylines of normalcy and all this stuff of the sports world. But I think that the difference is we've had all this time in between, like you're mentioning, to kind of see how we collectively, it is very reminiscent of the monoculture of the 80s and 90s, you know, where people had only a specific amount of channels and things like that, and they would all tune into the same thing. It feels like that, and I do believe that this will be a big moment for the UFC, but it really, the big X factor is obviously the pay-per-view portion of this, right? Like, because you're also dealing in a pandemic that is, you know, playing out in this very, you know, devastating way economically. And I'm not sure to what extent, and plus with bars being shut down and everything else, to what extent those numbers will look like. Like, will it look like a huge smashing success that way? I don't know. But I do feel like the eyes will be all over this this event in general. And of course, you have that very nice middle prelim card that has some really great fights on it, four fights on ESPN. I feel like those are going to be probably discussed more than any that have shown up on ESPN to date.
Right. Yeah, the ESPN card could be a fight night. You know, that's like the main part of a fight night card.
Yeah, 100%, man.
I think that's definitely going to draw people in. I think you're going to see maybe more people, like casual people, buy the pay-per-view than normal, even despite the, you know, the economic stuff that you mentioned. And also, I think there's some easy to digest matchups here. It's like, if you don't know anything about the sport, I think this is really well matched, and I think you're just going to see some great fights play out. So I think it has a lot going for it. We'll see how it goes, but I know I'll be watching.
Oh yeah.
And Chuck, you mentioned it. I think ultimately this might be the biggest point of all. And for Brasilia, that was still so early into it. We didn't really understand what was going to happen to the world. All of this was still getting figured out. And also that felt dirty in some way. It felt like that shouldn't be happening. And it almost was like a finger to the face of what was going on in the rest of the world. Yeah. Now though, we have had what, 6-7 weeks of just everyone dealing with their boredom and everyone
it's true.
Fiending for something like this, sports content like this. I think that's going to be a big difference. I think that's going to be a big key to all of this. It does feel like we're going to own the sports landscape this weekend. We'll see. Yeah. I'm really fascinated to see. It's an interesting case study, and I am really interested to sort of see how this plays out.
Yeah, I feel like it's actually the kind of sub-story of the whole thing, right? Like, how will this all look? I mean, honestly, man, I have, and I this is a crude gauge, obviously, but like, I you talk to people who don't normally pay attention to UFC, or maybe very peripherally, and they're aware of it happening. And I feel like just that alone, and kind of ESPN and all of those factors being involved, I think it's going to be very interesting, especially for us who've been in the sport for a long time, to see what that means. You know what I mean? To see if it creates new fans, if it you know, creates new criticisms, what it ends up doing. It's all part of the intrigue this weekend, man.
Absolutely. So let's dive into it. Let's not waste any more time. So you guys know how we do on these pay-per-view preview shows here on The Man and the Myth. One big question. We're going to be asking one big question about each of these main fights. Then we're going to be making picks. And we each have one lock of the night still in our back pocket to be able to give out to whoever we want. We made one for the undercard pick. We already have one in place. We'll recap that at the end of the show. We have one more left. So let's dive into it. First of all, this main event. My God. Unbelievable fight. I there's no more superlatives you can pile on that would be unacceptable at this point. This fight is unreal. Justin Gaethje, Tony Ferguson. My one big question for Justin Gaethje and Tony Ferguson is the curse of Khabib Nurmagomedov truly real?
That's a good question.
So I think we can all agree on a couple things right off the bat, gentlemen. Number one, Ferguson Gaethje, what we have here, this is a dream fight between, two of the best lightweights of our era, but also two of the greatest just breakers of men that we have ever seen in lightweight history. That being said, number two, in its current form, it is still, as I've said before, a bridge fight to get to where we all want to go, which leads into point number three. At this point, it is fairly obvious that Khabib Tony is the preeminent curse fight of our time. Five times it's been booked, five times it falls apart, and for increasingly bizarre and unprecedented reasons, a bad weight cut or an injury, whatever, that's fine. Tripping over a television wire less than a week out? Okay, I guess that happens. But now we have a global pandemic. A global pandemic that shuts down travel across the world. Get out of here with that. This is officially cursed. We can say that. I think we can all safely agree on that. But what does that actually mean in a historical context, right? Because Tony Ferguson is 36 years old. If he won the UFC lightweight title today, he would already be the oldest lightweight champion in history. Time is not on his side. He also just inherently takes a lot of damage with his style. He has been through war after war after war. He has dealt with injuries. There are forces at work here, guys. A lot of forces that are working against Tony Ferguson right now. And so again, how cursed is this? We've seen stuff like this before. Chuck Liddell versus Wanderlei Silva was seemingly cursed for a long time.
Yeah.
And then eventually that happened. We got to it, even if it was a tad late. There's precedence here for us eventually getting to where we need to go. But we have reached a moment in time right now where if Khabib Tony is truly cursed, this is it, fellas. This is the end of the line. Yeah. This is where it dies. There is nowhere to go after this. We have officially exhausted every possible damn option after this. On Saturday, we're going to find out if the curse is real because, as we said, from day one, the first day they booked this fight and we were actually on the air at that time, what's the most MMA way for an all-time great fight like this to be lost? It would be an exact scenario like this. Justin Gaethje coming in, short notice, in the middle of a global crisis, and just really capping off a half decade of blue balls. Just really getting us. Gentlemen, is the curse real? That is the question I keep returning to, and I am not going to lie. I'm worried. I think it might be.
That's a lot to unpack, Sean. That was very well said, by the way. And I do agree with you 100%. I think that MMA, in general, thrives on its own unpredictability and chaos. And I think that that exhilaration of it happening is kind of a driver of why you watch the sport to begin with, because you can't get to the things you want to see sometimes. And I do feel like the fight you're mentioning having been made five times, and let's remember, with varying degrees of escalation each time it's made, everything just keeps working out perfectly in terms of the setups, but then they can't get to the fight, right? It gets bigger and bigger because their streaks go on, their nastiness and, towards each other increases, and the stakes get crazier with new periphery around them and stuff like that. It always enhances that way, but yet we can't get to it. So yes, I feel what you're saying. Justin Gaethje comes into this fight, and he is kind of, in general, the berserker of a division anyway. He's kind of the agent of chaos that would do this, right? He would show up and be like, okay, you guys had your chance to get it. You never got it. Now it's my turn to just change the narrative and just change it. And he could do it, man. And it's like you just mentioned, Tony Ferguson, and I know you've done a great job with Tony and talking to him and then people around him and stuff like that. And he is a great character in this game. But cutting weight just a couple of weeks ago, his age, everything else, man, God, it adds up into something catastrophic for that Khabib, Tony Ferguson thing. I really do think that that is the underlying threat of this fight. Is just that it feels like it could be completely disrupted forever after this Saturday.
Right, and that's what makes this matchup so special. Exactly like you're saying, there's a lot of factors going into it with Tony cutting weight and all this stuff, and Justin Gaethje coming in. Now, this is as worthy an opponent as you can put up against Tony Ferguson, which is the whole subtext of the thing. If Justin Gaethje wins this fight, it does. It scutters that Khabib fight with Tony. It's never going to happen probably at that point. Obviously, the interim title is on the line, but really what's on the line is the shot at the actual title and the fight that we've all been waiting to see. It's incredible. I mean, it's really wild. And if there is a curse, if there is such a thing that something can be cursed, it is that fight. And I think it just adds – so much more intrigue and interest into this for me to see if Tony Ferguson can get in there, get the job done, and get to the fight that, you know, we've all been waiting to see for years now.
The stakes here are just unreal, man. They are phenomenal pressure type of stakes. And it's
gambling with our emotions. You know what I mean? Like
We're so invested.
At this point, that's fully what's going on. It is gambling with our with everything we've built up for all those years.
It's so fun too, because as you talk to people outside of the bubble, I've already done a couple interviews for like national outlets and things like that. It's getting somewhere. Like when you talk about a fight like this, right? Like you do those type of like interviews with people who don't really know much about MMA.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of times we fall back on that old platitude of like, oh, guys, you got to watch this one. Like this, there's no way this is boring. There's a lot of fights where you make that claim beforehand of like, there's no way this is boring. And it feels like 90% of the time when you do that, we get Ngannou Lewis or we get Izzy Romero and just something like that on our hands to spite us. But man, I honestly don't know if we have seen a fight this year, hell, last year, that is such a guarantee. Like if there were odds, I would bet every penny I own in this world that this one is going to be exciting as all hell. Like this doesn't even feel like the alternative is an option. It's wild. To what degree would you guys bet this one living it's up to its expectations?
I mean, in this, I feel like we're putting some stank on it, but I honestly think it's impossible because it's part of just, first
this
of all, if you just look
proof.
At,
this is stank-proof.
Yeah, this
man.
Feels stank-proof, right? Because I feel like Justin Gaethje only has one speed and he only has one mindset. And that's kind of just to go in there and destroy. And I feel like Tony Ferguson is probably his closest doppelganger in that sense. Like, I feel like he does the same thing. He goes about it a little differently from a different perch. But I'm like, they both have that in them. That's who they are. It's just they don't have a sense of self-preservation like certain champions and stuff like that, like who, think about the long game. They think about the war right in front of them and refuse to lose the war. So I think that it's one of those situations where if it's the safest, you know, kind of prediction you can make is that this is going to be an excellent fight.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would bet the house that this fight is going to be exactly what we think it's going to be. And that's what is so amazing about it. Take out everything else, which does add to it. The interim title, the Khabib fight hanging in the balance. If you just look at this as what it is, just this fight, it has the makings of being one of the greatest fights we ever see. Of course, just based on the way these two go at it. Then you add in all the other stuff and it hits a fever pitch. So I think this is, it's guaranteed that this is going to be a great fight.
It's so funny because I think obviously there's a big four or a big three in this lightweight division. Khabib, Tony, Connor. I think Khabib is kind of his own thing, right? Like he's different. Like he's his own category with the way he does things. No one really fights like Khabib. But these two, Tony and Justin, as I said at the top, they are the two greatest breakers of men with their style that I think we have ever seen in this weight class. And yet they are opposites in so many respects and they're mirror images in so many respects at the same time. They're both going to keep walking forward. They're both willing to push themselves past any sort of like reasonable human limit in there. Other than the question I asked about, you know, is the curse real? Really, this fight comes down to me to one big question, and I honestly don't know the answer, and I can't wait to see it. Do you guys think we will see either man break the other? Because that will be a sight to behold.
If we do, it's going to be in the fashion, honestly, like, or it seems like it has the potential to be in the fashion of the Rory McDonald, Robbie Lawler fashion, where it's just, they stare off like that, and it's like, you're going to have to kill me since. Like, I feel like that these two guys, man, and how far they've come, and still, obviously, this feeling like not the destination, right? This still feels like they're in the journey to where they're trying to get, and I feel like that's also a hunger factor that plays in. I just think that, given all of that, man, it's going to take, one guy's going to have to do something pretty extraordinary to break the other guy's will. It could happen, man. You know what I mean? We saw Eddie Alvarez stand in there and do a war with Justin Gaethje until Gaethje eventually just dropped. He couldn't go anymore. So I feel like you're going to have to see something along those lines and maybe even something crazier than that for that to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the possibility of a flash knockout or somebody catches somebody in a submission or whatever, it's there. I mean, that's always,
for sure.
That's the sport. But I think more than likely, the winner of this fight's going to win it in a brutal decision, or it's going to be a slow fade out until they just can't take it anymore, you know?
And, oh my God, I'm getting chills.
And well, we've seen it. We've seen it happen to Gaethje a couple of times. No, no disrespect to him. We've seen it happen in the Alvarez fight, the Poirier fight, where he can't take any more shots. And we've never really seen it with Ferguson. So
never.
It's going to be, that to me feels like where this is at. And man, I can't wait for it.
Well, really quickly, before we get to our picks, let's talk about what this means for both men, because it means very different things, I think, for both men. For Tony, we talked about this last week, but historically, I wonder, what does this fight mean for Tony Ferguson? Because he's had a lot of these now, these stay busy type of fights now. But I will admit, this one feels different going into it. Like, this one does not feel like the Donald Cerrone fight or the Anthony Pettis fight or even the Kevin Lee fight. This one feels legitimately like if he wins, because of sort of the circumstances surrounding all of this, outside the circumstances outside of ours and the world's control, at this point, we will really just have two legitimate lightweight champions in MMA. Like, this is not a placeholder. Yeah. It, or at least it doesn't feel like it to me. Like, we already went through it. We already all agree to that Ferguson's resume surpasses Habib's if he wins this fight. Mm-hmm. But to me, this ceases to even be a 1A and 1B type of conversation at this point. Like, at that point, it's just 1A and 1A. And it's wild because I can't think of many other comparisons throughout history for something like this, where you have these two figures who really could claim the same exact thing at the exact same time after so long. Like, at some point, the belt is just a meaningless object, right? Context is key. And anybody who lived through this era, if Tony wins this fight, Tony's a fucking champion, man. Like even though this fight is for nothing, it feels like there are real historical stakes here up for grabs for him. Do you sense that, or is that kind of just me being a Tony Ferguson guy?
I think you just described that perfectly. I agree with you 100%. I hadn't really thought of it just like that, but I think you're right. I think that's exactly right. If he wins... And let's say that he does it in some kind of, I mean, obviously all of his wins are just like these very memorable affairs, really, but they're bloody affairs a lot of times and they're back and forth. But let's say he does that, or he just gets through it easier than he seems, whatever, but he puts Justin Gaethje away. That then basically becomes, since he won that interim title against Kevin Lee at UFC 216, three defenses, essentially, right? Like, you could look at it this way. And you'd be like, he's on par, you know what I mean? If not doing more than Nurmagomedov, it's just that the actual belt had been assigned the other direction. But the bottom line is, at this point, I think you nailed it. To me, in my mind, going 13 fights in a row and Justin Gaethje being your latest, that's a champion, man. Like, I would look at it as 1A and 1A as well. I think I really would at that point.
Yeah, I think that's right. There's nothing more to add. You said it exactly right, Sean. And as you just said, Chuck, lucky number 13 would be in a row here, which is so funny. We're talking about curses and everything. This would be his 13th straight win.
Everything's going against it.
Hey, man. 13 is the luckiest number in the world. Two-time MVP Steve Nash wore that number. That is a blessed number.
That's my daughter's birthday is the 13th, so I like it. But.
There you go.
We have a lot of love for 13 here today. I love it.
Really quickly for Justin. This really, dude, like, we can't overstate how massive of a spot this is for Justin. And in a way, like, no one got lucky here, but in a way, he got really lucky, because Trevor Whitman told us this on Monday, and actually Justin echoed this to me when I talked to him last week too. They were really worried about that original April 18th fight. Like, they were both very clear that Justin was not going to be ready for that fight. Like, he was going through with it because it was an opportunity that probably wasn't coming back around, but Justin Gaethje was not going to be properly prepared to fight Tony Ferguson on the 18th. And now he's had an extra 3 weeks.
Oh yeah.
And now he's been training out there with the champ, Kamaru Usman. Like, they have gotten a ton of support from the UFC PI behind the scenes too. Justin's ready now. Like, this is peak Justin. He has always told me that he only needs 4 to 6 weeks to get ready, and that the 10 to 12 is just to get ready mentally. Like, he is the ultimate benefactor here. And we talked about it, man. The eyes are going to be on this fight throughout the world. If he is able to come in here on short notice, the only major sport going right now, and score, let's just say, a fight of the year type of win over a guy who hasn't lost in almost a decade, and announce himself to an audience that maybe isn't super familiar with him, completely overturn the apple cart at 155. Dude, what could this do for Justin Gaethje? Because it feels like it could be huge.
I mean, I think that like you mentioned, it's a huge moment for him. Like, if he's able to do that, and the way he would have to get it done, I think, against Ferguson would be very eye-opening. I think that that's just the given of the situation. So, I'm with you, man. I already feel like he's across in this weird way. I feel like people kind of know him, but it's funny though, man. Like, you know how it is on the outside world. They just, I don't know how much it registers or resonates when he fights. He just looks like a, you know, a guy with a crazy style. And we've seen boxers in the day who've been, you know, just had that kind of style, like Arturo Gatti or somebody like that, who didn't like transcend beyond the sport, really. It's like people paid attention to him within the sport. And I feel like Gaethje's right there. I feel like this would be his moment. If he's going to do that, if he's going to have his transcendent moment, it's going to come right now, and it'll set up, obviously, a big fight for himself and his big paydays with the big names, which are basically Nurmagomedov and probably, obviously, Conor McGregor at some point, right? Like, you'd have those two names out there, and I feel like he sets himself up brilliantly for that.
Yeah, Conor's a factor here, too. I mean, you know we're going to hear something from Conor as this is going on. He's going to be tweeting. So, like, yeah, it's just, it's the biggest opportunity he could possibly ask for at this point. And, yeah, it's his opportunity to lose, basically, at this stage. Yep.
All right, gentlemen. Well, oh, my gosh.
Drum roll, please.
I just keep getting chills thinking about this fight. It's time.
Hot flashes, baby.
Maybe that's more appropriate. That's fair. Oh my God. It's time. It's time to make those picks. Chuck Mendenhall. Tony Ferguson. Justin Gaethje. You set the tone for us, baby. Where are you leaning with this? What are you thinking?
Man, I have to say, like, of this whole main card, obviously this one was very difficult. And part of it, man, it's like, it's just the unique setup of this fight and just kind of the circumstances and everything else. And it's like that old, it was the old lyrics, you know, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. It almost feels like that, where you're just completely like, all right, I'm going to fall in love with this fight just because it's here this night. You know what I mean? Totally, like, let's one night stand this baby. And it's such a crazy setup. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I think that it's all of the things we just talked about that kind of guide my sense as to what's going to happen, because I do believe this is a chaotic sport, and I do believe the MMA gods kind of like to smite us whenever we think we're getting close to something. I just see the scenario where Justin Gaethje has the fight of his life here. You know what I mean? Like, I think Justin's going to get it done, man. I just keep thinking about this fight, and my gut feeling just tells me, man, like, that this is his time and the circumstances. Part of it is because Tony Ferguson, you know, we love his esoteric behavior, like just being eccentric in the fight game and cutting weight just to prove a point and all that stuff. But you wonder at some point if something like that's going to bite him, and I feel like I can't get it out of my mind that this will be that moment just because of the weirdness of the setup and everything else. I think I'm gonna pick. I'm gonna go with Justin Gaethje on this. I don't know if he's gonna break him. You know, it's one of those type of situations where it's hard to imagine that, but I think he's gonna get it done, and I think it's going to be a finish, man. I think that Justin Gaethje's gonna finish. I'll just leave it at that. I think that that's what's gonna happen.
Whoa!
Wow! That's a great sound that just came out of.
Well, because you're saying Gaethje's gonna finish him, and it's like, in my mind, I go, yeah, that's possible. But then I think, how are you going to finish Tony Ferguson? He gets caught. He rolls away from it. Like, how are you going to pin that guy down and stop him? It's such an intriguing matchup.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go the other way on this one. I think Tony Ferguson holds serve. I think he gets it done. I don't know why, but I'm feeling like a submission is probably the most likely way for this fight to end in a Ferguson win.
Okay.
You know, I don't know. That's just me speculating, but I think he gets it done. I do think we end up getting that Khabib fight afterwards, and it's not going to be for lack of trying. I think Justin Gaethje is going to put on a fantastic performance. He definitely could win, but I got to go with El Kakui on this.
Chris, what are you, a noob? Come on, man. You know that this shit doesn't work this way.
I know.
You know what, though, man? I could see it this way, too. Here, you know, that you mentioned submission. That would be a big deal, too, right? Because I think, I don't have his page pulled up, but I don't think he's ever lost that way. His only two losses were by TKO, I believe, and KO.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
That would be novel.
Oh, man. So you guys have both said points that I agree very hard with. I'm worried, man. I'm not going to lie. I'm worried. Everyone knows where I stand on this. I've been beating the drum for Tony Ferguson for 5 years at this point. I'm a half decade deep into this position at this point.
You guys were pre-picking Ferguson to beat Nurmagomedov. That's why this will never happen, brothers.
I'm so worried, man. I'm so worried because this does feel, as someone in my position, this feels like this could be the end of the line. This feels like this probably should have been 2 years ago that we got this Khabib fight already. Like, it might already be too late. The window might have closed already. That 36 years old scares the hell out of me. The lightweight division is not a country for old men. It is a young man's game. And even this, the circumstances are not ideal. This matchup is not ideal. The whole setup is not ideal. Tony Ferguson already cut weight a few weeks ago.
That weight cut is a factor, man. That is the thing that worries me, too, about Ferguson. The weight cut, it made no sense to do that.
Chuck, you said that your gut was telling you great Gaethje. My gut is also telling me Gaethje, and my gut is telling me Gaethje via first or second round KO. And that's just, like, that's where my head's at. And these are probably my top two my guys in the sport.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you know how everyone has your my guy list, like, this is number one and number two for me. I've experienced a lot with both these gentlemen over the course of the years. So this is painful for me.
Yeah.
But I am in too deep. I'm going to see this until the end. I'm going to see this through until the end. Chris, you said submission. Yeah. That is exactly what I have written down on my sheet here.
Look at this.
Tony Ferguson, third round submission. He's going to keep this going. We're going to get this damn fight eventually, and it's going to continue on Saturday.
I like that there's like this this whole card is like a civil war for Sean's guys. You know, he's got Vicente Luque against Nico Price. He's got Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje. This is torture for you, man.
Dude, it's tearing me apart, Chuck. Oh, man.
I like it, fellas. I mean, hey, if it happens just like that, we've dodged a bullet, right? Like, we could all look at that and be like, okay, now they can do this fight. I just think that, you know, it's kind of no lose in that situation if Tony can get it done. So it's like, I hope that, you know, if it happens like that, I hope we get the fight we want, man.
All right, well, we'll see. We have a lot left to get to. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to continue our preview on the other side. If you were to guess, on average, how many days people in the United States have to wait to see a doctor, what would you say? A week, maybe? Actually, on average, people have to wait around 29 days to see a doctor in major US cities. Basically, a month. If you're dealing with a condition like erectile dysfunction, you want treatment ASAP. That's why our friends at Roman have spent years building a digital platform that can connect you with a doctor licensed in your state, all from the comfort of home. Roman makes it convenient to get the treatment you need on your schedule. Just grab your phone or computer, complete a free online visit, and you'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. And if the doctor decides that treatment is right for you, Roman's Pharmacy can ship your medication to you with free two-day shipping. You also get free unlimited follow-ups with your doctor anytime you have questions or want to adjust your treatment plan. With Roman, there are no commitments and you can cancel anytime. So if you're struggling with ED, go to getroman.com/MITH for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's getroman.com/myth, MITH, for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. All right, y'all, we are back. Two title fights on this card. Let's get into the second one, this co-main event. Henry Cejudo, Dominic Cruz. I'll say right off the bat, this was the hardest fight for me to pick on the entire card. There are so many questions and intrigues going into this fight, but Chuck, for you, what is your one big question going into Henry Cejudo versus Dominic Cruz?
All right. Well, for me, man, obviously this fight particularly feels like a legacy kind of baton type situation because you have the guy that I think everybody associates the bantamweight division with, you know, to this point, still to this day, even though he has only fought four times in 9 years. But Dominic Cruz is kind of still the bantamweight that comes to mind when you talk about a dominant champion and all that stuff. And then you got the new guy, Henry Cejudo, who's kind of like, you know, changing some things and has a chance to really collect the biggest names in the industry. Really, when you're talking about these Demetrius Johnson, now Dominic Cruz, right? Like, these are the types of guys, it puts him into an elite space by himself. And, to me, I love the matchup. It's a crazy, you know, it's a crazy thing with all kinds of intangibles, but the question of how does Cruz look 3.5 years after looking his worst is the big question for me, right? Because the last version we saw of Dominic Cruz was him getting worked by Cody Garbrandt. And if you recall, man, everything about that fight was just mesmerizing. It was like, I thought Cody Garbrandt was like one of the most masterful performances. And then afterwards with Dominic Cruz, it was like he couldn't have been more classy in defeat. Like, he was just, he handled himself like such a professional in the sport. Like, he was so wise to the game and everything else. Now you advance 3.5 years to this spot, And I just, you're wondering, man, because we've been talking about Cruz. We broke down UFC 199 when he fought Uriah Faber a couple weeks back. You just wonder, is that vintage version of Dominic Cruz there? Can he access him after all of his injuries, all of the mental play that has gone into this, you know, the cage rust that he clearly doesn't believe in, all of that stuff? Does he still have it at 30? Is he 35? Does he still have that? Can he access that vintage Cruz? And will that be enough to overtake a guy as skilled and honed, obviously, as Henry Cejudo? So I'm hoping against hope, you know, that that's kind of what we get. If we get the vintage Cruz in there, I feel like this fight could just be really, really crazy.
This fight has the potential for so many things. I feel like there is so much. You said it's a legacy play. I agree with you 100%. It is a legacy play on both sides. Dominic Cruz, in my mind, has a chance here to leave Saturday with two things. One would be the single most unique resume in the history of the sport. It would be incomparable. Being a divisional GOAT, which he already is, the foundational linchpin for the bantamweight division, gets derailed by injuries constantly, and then to not only return from a 4+ year layoff to upset the number one guy in the world once, but then to do it twice. Literally no one else in the history of the sport, both past and future, will ever be able to claim a resume like that. Like, that's a singular type of resume.
Yeah.
And because of that, to me, the second thing Dominic has a chance to leave Saturday with, his name firmly entrenched in the GOAT conversation, man. And I'm not being hyperbolic. Like, if Dominic Cruz is able to do this with those credentials and beating the odds in such an unprecedented way for a second time, and this time in the middle of a global pandemic, like, I don't care if people disagree with me, and I'm sure a lot of people will. Dominic Cruz, to me, immediately vaults into that Jones, GSP, Demetrius Johnson conversation for me. He is up there, and I would feel comfortable about it. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. Obviously, the scarcity of his, his showings would probably play a role, but I think that when you really weigh out the types of things he's had to overcome. And I mean, you really got to actualize what these injuries are, you know, all the different, the ACLs on both legs, shoulder, his foot problems, everything that went on with this guy. And then the long layoffs and the advancements, because when you talk about guys who come back after long layoffs, this sport changes like ridiculously in 3 years. I mean, Ronda Rousey's career played out in less time than Dominic Cruz last fought. It's like, it's one of those situations in terms of her UFC career, but like, it's just so much can change, right? And to come back and to actually have it made the ability to adapt to what's going on, to know and game plan, and then to beat a guy like Henry Cejudo, we know is a tough out. Yes, I think that you're right. If you look at all of that and you really put the proper emphasis and importance on what that means and significance, I think that I would have a hard time arguing with you about him belonging in that same conversation. He would really only have that one black mark on him, and that would be the going Garbrandt fight, right? Like, you would basically, the Cody Garbrandt would almost be the outlier, and you'd almost wonder if something was wrong with him at night at that point. So yes, I think I would put him in that space.
Yeah, we were talking about this a little bit off air the other day, Sean, when we were discussing doing this preview, and I completely agree with you. I think if Cruz is able to come back after this another long layoff and win this title, he is firmly in the top five of the sport in history. I mean, it's unprecedented what he's doing. And to your point, Chuck, I think we know he had injuries. You know, he had the plantar fasciitis. He had his ankles and everything are wrapped up going into that fight against Cody Garbrandt, which Cody fought the fight of his life. Obviously, he had a similar performance since then. He looked incredible against Cruz. So, you know, there's factors there. And you also have to think, I know he had shoulder surgery, but he has been had this time to rest and rehab and work on his skills. Cruz, it's very possible and I think likely that he comes back and looks very good. To me, the type of person that he is, the cerebral nature of the way he fights and everything, I don't think he'd be coming back just to chase glory. He's not that guy. He has other opportunities. He's a commentator. He does a lot of stuff. I don't think he'd be coming back if he thought that he couldn't perform like himself in those vintage days. So I think it's a huge opportunity for him, and I think he really could vault himself into the pantheon.
There's that landline.
Yeah. Hang tight, guys. Let me grab that real quick.
It had to make an appearance. It had to make an appearance. Well, Chris. Oh, my God. We need a landline button. I need a sound effect or something from you, Chris. We need to work on that. But Chris, to go off of what you just said, to jump off of what you just said, because I agree with everything you're saying there. Right now, the odds on this, Dominic Cruz is only a plus 175 underdog. Like, he is not even a 2-1. And this is after 4 years away. Donald Cerrone has fought 12 times since Dominic Cruz last fought, guys.
Isn't that crazy? That tells you about what the perception of Dominic Cruz is. It's amazing to me how high we hold him. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know after all these years. Only four fights in 9 years. That's how high we hold him.
Dude, and Henry Cejudo is out here on a tear. Like, he's destroying everyone. No one gets respect like that from the odds makers after 4 years away. It's strictly a Dominic Cruz thing. It's crazy. And it's also, this fight is so fascinating to me because it is such an interesting challenge for Cejudo. Because he has never really faced anyone like Dom. It is the total opposite of what he was going up against with Marlon Moraes. Marlon Moraes is a powerhouse. Dominic is all about finesse. He'll finesse you up and down that canvas. And he is not going to slow down. He's not going to get tired. And on top of that, if he wins, dude, if Henry Cejudo wins, this is what Henry Cejudo's four-fight run would look like.
Yeah.
Demetrius Johnson, at the peak of his powers.
Yep.
Juiced up TJ Dillashaw. Marlon Moraes.
Don't sugarcoat it, Sean.
Dude, Marlon Moraes and then Dominic Cruz.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a better four-fight run, man, and I am struggling really hard. Like, dude, among the great four-fight runs, that has to be an all-timer.
That's the best guys. You just mentioned the best guys in their primes or, close to their primes or in their primes of two divisions, you know? That's who he will beat. The guys from two divisions, the top of the top. So, yes, I think that four-fight streak would be one of the best ever.
I only wish, my only regret about this fight, I only wish that we would have gotten a real lead-up because the press conference between those two men would have been legendary. I don't really know how Cringe Cejudo would have handled the direction that Dominic would have taken this and how real he would have gotten with him, how like internal he would have gotten with this and psychoanalyzing Henry in a way that Henry has never experienced.
Right. That is the beauty of, you're exactly right. That's the beauty of it because he gets people, Cejudo gets people annoyed or like they laugh at him or whatever, but Cruz would just straight face him and just give him a serious response and it would be a fascinating situation, but.
Oh, man. All right, last thing. What's the key to this fight for you guys? Like, what's going to be the decider for this fight?
I mean, for me, and we've seen Dominic Cruz, it really comes down to, Henry Cejudo, if he can execute basically the game plan, and I'm guessing that he's going to try to infuse his wrestling. That would be the smart way to go, right? Like, and to me, it's like, can he do that? Because I honestly think at 5 foot, I think he's 5 foot eight, but he's kind of a stringy, almost like a coil. Like, it's very difficult to take Dominic Cruz down, and it's kind of difficult to even pin him down or find him in range, right? Like, it's tough to hit him and everything else. But I think Henry's going to have to figure out a way to, rough up the kind of taller and ultimately probably the bigger man in this fight. And can he do that? And I think that's like, if he's able to do that, I feel like it should be Cejudo's in the end, just given the circumstances we talked about. But that's a big question, man. And Cruz has a great way of shutting guys down and making them change game plans, midway through the first round. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think pace, I think that's what you're talking about also here. I mean, if Cejudo's using his wrestling, it's going to dictate the pace. If Cruz can dictate the pace and get his footwork going and, get in and get out and hit Cejudo, I think that is obviously going to be the key for him. And like you're saying, if Cejudo has to change his game plan, we've seen him do it. We've seen him get dominated in a first round against Marlon Moraes and turn it around in one of the most impressive comebacks I've ever seen, especially in a title fight.
True.
But we'll see. I mean, we know Cruz is a master, game planner and has a lot of craftiness to his style as well. So, but I think pace is the thing that's going to determine the fight. And we've seen Cejudo have problems with a guy who can keep a pace like that. At times, Joseph Benavidez, Mighty Mouse, obviously, he did beat Mighty Mouse in the second fight, but it's a very close fight. So I think that's ultimately the deciding factor here.
And Chris, you've said it a couple times now, but I really do think it's an important point. Knowing what we know about Dominic, this is not a man who would come back unless he saw something there. Unless he saw something in Henry Cejudo that he knows he can exploit or beat if he saw a roadmap. He's just not that guy. He's not coming back to lose. Oh my God. This is the hardest fight for me to pick this entire main card. Where'd you guys end up?
Oh man. You know what, man? And I've been on, like you were talking about going, everybody wants to talk about these fights. And I know I went one way earlier on a prediction, and I'm going to go the other way here.
No.
I mean, you know, because the truth is, it's like you talk about it, you talk yourself into these weird scenarios, but it's almost like my heart says Dominic Cruz, just of what he's been and everything. Your head says Henry Cejudo, but you know, you wouldn't be a writer if you weren't dealing with your heart, right? So I'm like, I'm going to go with Dominic Cruz in this thing. I think that maybe this is just me being like, you know, a romantic in terms of like been able to do that. The whole thing we just mentioned, being able to come back from all that and pull this off and regain that title yet again. But dude, if anybody can do it, I feel like it's him, man. And I think he is that smart. He's that cerebral. And he showed us in that fight against TJ Dillashaw that he can make the in-cage adjustments and like kind of figure out guys' rhythms and everything else and solve them, even though that fight was extremely close. I don't know. I'm going to go with that, man. I think it goes the distance. I think Dominic Cruz somehow figures out a way to outpoint him in the end.
Yeah. You know, after the Marlon Moraes fight, I said to myself, well, that's it. Now you can't. Cejudo's elevated himself in my mind to a place where you can't bet against this guy because he looked out of it and he came back and he won that fight convincingly. Very impressive. I believe he had some injuries even going into that fight. And I just said, that's it. Now this is a guy that I'm going to pick to win every fight until he loses. And now this matchup's here and I'm going to go against my opinion on that. I think Dominic Cruz is going to come back. I think he's going to look like himself, you know, as close to that vintage Cruz as we're going to see. And I think we can't forget, Cejudo has a tough weight cut ahead of him. Dominic Cruz does not, you know, and I think that is going to play a factor. I do also think it's going to go the distance, and I think Dominic Cruz is going to do what Dominic Cruz always does. I think he's going to outpoint Henry Cejudo, and he's going to steal that belt back.
Does Henry Cejudo have a tough weight cut in front of him? He doesn't like he makes 135 pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, I see picture. It seems like it's always a struggle. I mean, obviously 125 is a lot harder, but he's definitely coming in with more of a weight cut, I think, than Cruz is going to. And you look at him, he looks huge. I've seen a couple of pictures from this week, so maybe I'm reading into that, but I'm assuming he's going to have a bit of a difficult time, but certainly more than Cruz. And I think that is going to be a factor over five rounds, especially with the way that Cruz fights.
Yeah, man, I've gone back and forth on this all week. To me, I just keep coming back to one thing. This is a hard, hard thing to ask of Dominic. Doing this once was already legendary enough, but doing this twice, no one has ever done that for a reason. He's 35 years old. He's not the same guy. Would I be surprised? Hell no. He is Dominic Cruz. We have now done two fight flashbacks where Dominic was involved, both WEC 53 and UFC 199. And guys, but we've talked about it then. Like both times you're watching these fights and you're just remembering how exquisite, how sublime this guy truly is when he's healthy enough to compete and how much of a treat it is when we actually do see him out there. I don't doubt Dominic for a second. I just ultimately think this one is too hard of an ask. And I think people continually seem to underrate Henry Cejudo because of the image he's portraying outside of the cage makes them feel like he is not as good as he actually is. And he is one of the great fighters of our era at this point. I'm picking Henry Cejudo by decision. It's a tough one, but I will say that I'm completely on the opposite side on both of these main fights as mm-hmm. Chuck. That makes me feel good.
No, that's true.
That does. That should make you feel good. That should make you feel very good, actually. Run to your bookie, Sean.
What's that?
Run to your bookie.
Do people still have bookies? Is that still like a job?
No, I just think they just have their phones, right? Just go on an app, put just in their bet.
Bovada or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, man, the bookie's getting wiped out from the world. Look at technology. Look at this.
It's just occurred to you, huh?
Let's keep it moving, guys.
All right.
This next fight, I mean, God, what can you say about this next fight? Francis Ngannou, Yairzinho Rozenstruik. We've been waiting for this one for a long, long time. It's gotten postponed multiple times, and it is finally here, gentlemen. And for me, my one big question about Francis Ngannou and Yairzinho Rozenstruik. Has Francis Ngannou truly grown from the ghosts of his past? Because this fight feels familiar in a lot of ways, right? Like, I'm not the first person to say this.
everything that people are saying about this fight, you could read the exact same columns being written about Derek Lewis 2 years ago. There's no way that this fight can be bad. Someone's going to sleep. It's a battle of heavyweights, two hardest punchers, whatever you want to throw out there. And we all remember how that one played out. Francis was gun-shy. It was an atrocious fight. And he admitted afterwards that he just couldn't get himself to pull the trigger. And now here we are. History has brought us back for a second go-round. The exact same narrative is all we have been hearing and all we will continue to hear around this fight. But there's one major difference. This is not the same Francis Ngannou. Curtis Blaydes, Cain Velasquez, Junior Dos Santos learned that, and they lasted 142 combined seconds. Combined seconds between them. This is Francis 2.0. This is the Francis that learned from those mistakes, that learned from the trash fire of that Derek Lewis fight. Is he going to be gun-shy again? I doubt it. And so almost 3 years later, we're finally going to get this heavy artillery battle that we always wanted. My question, you guys, do you believe, is this happening?
Oh, man. You know what? I tend to fully agree with you. But and especially given the names you just mentioned, JDS, Cain Velasquez, and Curtis Blaydes, right? He puts all those guys away very quickly. But before he fought Stipe Miocic, he had four fights where they all lasted very similar, like a minute and change, where he got through these guys. It seems like the key, honestly, is to kind of survive the opening round if you can. I mean, it's almost like looking at old Mike Tyson, right? Like it was like, just try to get past, you know, the outburst of power early, like just try to survive it. And you wonder if Rozenstruik is basically like, let's try at least not to get into a gunfight right away to try to take him out of his rhythm a little bit, maybe take away some of his power. Maybe you make it look a little ugly early and then try to then maybe trade with him in the second round or something like that. I think that would be smarter than then try to go out there and headhunt right away. And I think that if you just look at past performances, you're like, well, of course, it looks like Francis Ngannou has learned. It looks like he's been, you know, he's the guy that we wanted to see charging towards that title. I think he is. I really do. I think he learned the lessons, especially from that Derek Lewis fight. Something happened there that he's overcome it clearly. And Rozenstruik, when you look at his recent history, he's got all these KOs, he's undefeated, but he was losing up until 4 seconds to go, right, in that Overeem fight where he kind of, you know, lands this kind of Hail Mary moment. So he's almost coming off of a loss. He was that close to coming off of a loss. And I think that steers us. But, man, this has, like, because they're heavyweights and because they both know how to punch, it carries that element of, like, well, who's going to connect clean first? And if I'm putting my money on it, obviously, like, you look at Francis Ngannou, his hands being as quick as they are and the power that he's carrying. Dude, he was this close, and I'm pinching my fingers really close. He was this close to landing on Stipe Miocic. If you go back and watch that first round when they fought in Boston, there were a couple that whizzed right. I mean, you could say this about a lot of fights, but if any of those connect, that's a totally different scenario. You know what I mean? I have faith that he knows what he's doing, and he has learned. And I think that it's hard for me to see. I mean, it's easy for me to see that this fight could go either way, but I'm saying it's hard for me not to believe that Francis Ngannou is a changed fighter. I think he's poised in there, and I think he's, you know, he knows what he's doing a lot better than he did.
Yeah. I think Francis is definitely a changed fighter. It seems like he learned the lessons he needed to learn. And if you're following him at all during this quarantine, he's had a couple of opportunities canceled, the Columbus card, and then I think it was rescheduled again for April. He is a caged animal right now. He looks like is so ready to just shoot out of the corner and destroy whoever is in front of him, knowing that a title shot is right there. You know, and he's been waiting to get his hands on someone. I'm very excited to make this pick when we get to it. And I think this is going to be a good night for Francis, honestly.
Yeah. Dude, I spoke to Francis yesterday, and you call him a caged animal. You are not wrong, man. That dude, his level of focus right now and frustration, because if you remember, like he last fought in June, dude. June. Wow. It's been almost a year. He's been ready to go for a year. The state of this division is just really screwing him over. He is so mad right now and so frustrated and so just ready to take out that aggression on another human being. It's wild. I would not want to meet that guy in a back alley right now. And you have to remember, Jarzynek Rozenstruik called for this. Like, he specifically asked for this fight, man, which kudos to you, sir. That is, I don't see anybody out here asking to fight Francis Ngannou, especially right now. My question is it too much too soon for him? Because you guys mentioned the Overeem fight. That's a worse version of Overeem than Francis fought all those years ago. And you're right, Yarezino struggled with it to some degree. I do feel like this is a little bit too much too soon for him. But before we get to the picks, I want to have a really quick conversation about the state of this heavyweight division. Because I think, Chuck, both you and I, and I'm not sure, Chris, where you lie on this, but I think, Chuck, you and I are aligned that we both believe Francis is the best heavyweight in the world right now. Right?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's enough time. With, and, you know, the evidence kind of points to that, right? Like, the other guy's getting older, everything else. Yeah, I'd say that.
Yeah. I think he has been...
Pending a Stipe fight. But yeah, I mean, he's right there. You
know? Yeah, that's fair. And I would say, though, for me, I think he has been the best heavyweight in the world for quite some time. And I think he beats both Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic in a rematch if he ever gets that opportunity. I picked him to be champion by the end of 2020. That's definitely not happening now. But you guys, again, Francis hasn't fought since June. Who knows when we'll see DC Miocic 3. It doesn't seem like Stipe is jumping to sign a fight until this whole pandemic thing passes, which it's a little frustrating, but it's also totally understandable. So I'm not going to pile on the guy for that. But seriously, guys, I hate the heavyweight division right now. It might be my least favorite division. It feels like we've been stuck in the exact same place for 3 years, and I don't see any end to it.
I feel like we'll get a little clarity, obviously, in terms of who the next contender should be, but I feel like we need to, we need to have the Cormier-Miocic thing play out so that we do have that clarity, because I agree with you, man. It's like a bottleneck situation, and this pandemic obviously doesn't help anything. But it's just, you know, it's so tough to get guys rolling through to the top, especially at light heavyweight and heavyweight. You just want to see that happen. And I feel like, you know, this particular fight feels so good because both these guys still feel like the new blood in the division. So you want to see where it's all headed.
It's funny, too, because Francis has been the number one contender for like a year at this point. He was already the number one contender multiple times after Kane, after JDS, and now after this. Ugh, we'll see. In the meantime, let's make this pick. Kind of from the way we're breaking this down, I feel like we all might be going in the same direction, but let's see. Chuck, where are you leaning?
Yeah, man. And I mean, going off of what you said, I just think that Francis Ngannou is in that space right now. He feels like he's the hunter. He's got the chip on his shoulder. He's coming for it. I don't see this being the roadblock to take him down. I really don't, man. I think that this is a nice style matchup for him. It's a guy that brings an element of danger, but I just trust that Francis Ngannou is quicker and has more power in his hands and can get it done. So I'm going to go with him. I think it's going to end up being another one of those quickish knockout type things. Like, he'll land something early and then follow through and make it look probably a lot easier than it is. But I'm definitely going to take Ngannou by KO in this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anything, I think the only danger, honestly, that Ngannou is in is coming out of being too aggressive because he's so, you know, pent up and ready to get back into action.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that's probably the only thing he has to really be concerned about. Rozenstruik, obviously, one of the craziest, you know, comebacks ever against Overeem in the last fight. But remember, it's 24 and a half minutes of not a great performance, basically, against Overeem, who, you know, let's be honest, at this point in his career, is an easier finish than some of the other guys at the top of the division. And Rozenstruik did not get that done. I'm going with Francis Ngannou. I think it's going to be a first round knockout. And I'm so confident about that I'm going to make it my lock of the night.
Look at you go, brother. Look at that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, Chris. Once again, we're aligned, my friend. Francis, again, after speaking with him yesterday, there's no way I can pick against him at this point. That dude has been out there for almost a year trying to get what he deserves. And then this pandemic comes and he has to figure out a whole new situation. He's actually been borrowing equipment from the UFC PI to put in his garage, which, by the way, on that, if you're the intern at the PI who has to shake Francis Ngannou down to return rented equipment after all this is over... Like, that's not a job that I want. Sheesh, man.
No,
that's rough. But you're right. He's single-mindedly focused on just destroying this man. And ultimately, I think this just may be too much too soon for Yarezino. So that really, this pick comes down to one thing for me. It's simple. I think Francis is the uncrowned king of this heavyweight division. I see a second-round KO happening. I'm picking Francis Ngannou. And like you, Chris, I'm making this my lock of the night.
Low-hanging fruit, boys. Low-hanging fruit. All right.
Yeah, that felt like a good pick. I feel very good about that one.
Is that really low-hanging fruit out there, Ryan Spann picker? Valentina Shevchenko? I'm sorry, Valentina's not on this card for you to pick, Chuck. My man.
Oh, his memory. It's good. You got a good memory. All right.
All right, we have two more fights to get through. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back on the other side.
If you're bored in the house right now, why not spend some time on yourself? Our sponsor today, Manscaped, is here to make sure you're well-groomed above and below the belt. Manscaped promotes clean hygiene when it comes to shaving thanks to their Lawnmower 3.0. Manscaped is the only men's brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming. Subscribe to the perfect package and get a new replacement blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months, making sure your trimmer always stays fresh and clean. This is the perfect package for your perfect package. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code THEATHLETIC when visiting manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code THEATHLETIC. And for a limited time, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts, the Shed Travel Bag, a $39 value, and the patented high-performance anti-chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. So go to manscaped.com and use the code THEATHLETIC.
All right, guys, we are back once more. Two more fights to go. And good Lord, this featherweight affair is a damn good one. Calvin Kattar, Jeremy Stephens, Chuck, what is your one big question for this fight?
Oh, man. Well, again, this is one of those fights that could be like headlining a fight night, right? It's just got that kind of vibe to it. I love Calvin Kattar, man. And I love Jeremy Stephens, the version we've seen, you know, over the last few years. I mean, he's always been like this, but I just feel like he's given zero, Fs as he kind of goes forward. And I just think this is going to make for a very good fight. But my big question is, will Calvin Kattar's breakout moment essentially be to knock off a UFC OG for good? Because if you look, and it's kind of crazy, man, because Jeremy Stephens has had multiple skids in his career. He's always been able to rebound, win a few, and then he'll lose a couple. But this man, this would feel a little different because it would be five fights where he hasn't got a victory. Now, he had the one, Yara Rodriguez, where he got poked in the eye and he wasn't able to continue, but then he lost that fight and when they played back. And so he would basically be 0-4-1 during a stretch, and he's never had that before. And, if that's the case, I can't imagine a scenario, really, where the UFC wouldn't just kind of honor him, because I feel like he's always game to go in there. He's always going to put on a good fight. He's had a couple of fights in the nights recently. And all that stuff, but at some point you got to look at the record too, and I'd wonder if that might start to be kind of like, you know, Cowboy Cerrone, Pettis, some of the other guys on this. You're like, is this start to be the beginning of the end for a guy like Jeremy Stephens?
That's funny, because that is exactly where my head went to when I keep looking at and staring at this fight on the card, because I remember when we were doing our fight flashback for UFC 189, and the one thing that I mentioned for what's aged the best category was, it's what stood out to me watching that fight was the timeless violence of Jeremy Stephens. It felt like no matter where you went, whichever era of the UFC you wanted to pick, Jeremy Stephens was still right there putting on bangers and just like living his best life. This dude has been doing this since UFC 71. We're at That's UFC crazy. 249.
13
UFC
years.
UFC 71. That's so That's many crazy. Fights. Just think about that. Eventually, though, these things do come to an end. You're right, Chuck. And he is now winless in his last four fights. That the 15 seconds against Yair is a tough one to include in that. But, I mean, that's the reality of this. And this is the worst slump he's been on in his entire career. He's 33 years old. But that is not a normal 33. That's a Rory McDonald type of 33. That's someone with the mileage of probably someone, you know, 5-7 years older. The end comes eventually for all. And I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm still a big believer in Calvin Kattar, man. Like, I still believe Calvin Kattar would have won that Zabit fight if that thing were five rounds. This is a tough spot for Jeremy Stephens.
It is. Chris, anything to add on this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm agreeing with you with what you guys are saying there. It is a tough spot, especially because stylistically, Kattar has power, but he's such a technical striker. His punches are crisp. He gets right to the punch. And Stephens obviously is more of a brawler, a kind of a power striker. Not that he's not, you know, a technical guy also, but it seems like if he's going to get beaten to the punch, it's going to be by a guy like a Calvin Kattar. And we've seen Jeremy Stephens stay in fights but lose them by decision. And I think that this has the makings of something that we've seen before in the past, just because of the stylistic matchup. And I'm glad you brought up the UFC 189 thing, Sean, because that's what this feels like too. On this type of card, this fight is completely overlooked. But when we're actually on the night and we get to this fight, it's going to be phenomenal. We know it's going to be a really fun fight. Yeah. So it has that feeling, but I do think it's not a great spot for Jeremy Stephens. Doesn't mean he can't win it, but I think this is set up for a little bit of a changing of the guard kind of performance for Calvin Kattar here.
All right. So it actually feels like we're kind of aligned here. I am picking Calvin Kattar by unanimous decision. Chuck, what about you?
Yeah, I feel like, honestly, this is, like you guys are mentioning, I feel like Stevens obviously has the power, and we know what he can do in general in stand-up. Like, he's just a dog, man. He's going to go in there, and he's going to fight his fight. But I also feel like that's a little bit of a, you know, bull rushing, you know, the Matador situation for a technician like Kattar. Because, man, a couple of my favorite fights I've attended have been Kattar's fights, just because it's such crisp jabbing and boxing and moving. Like, he really is... one of those guys that's a joy to watch.
He loves his body shots too.
And he just makes it look so fluid. And I think that he's going to be able to piece up Jeremy Stephens. You know what I mean? I think he's going to let Jeremy kind of rush in there. He's going to like, bam, 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 and then keep doing it. I just see rinse and repeat in this type of fight. And I don't think he's going to get caught. I think that this has the makings to me like it could be a TKO somewhere, maybe in like the second or third round, like you just wear down Jeremy Stephens. But Stephens is such a dog. One way or another, I think that Kattar is just going to either get that done somewhere late in the fight, or he'll get that decision. But I like Kattar so much, gentlemen, that you can lock it down.
Look at that. There we go.
Wow. Yeah. Right. That's even my lock of the night right there.
Even calling a knockout. Jeremy Stephens does not get knocked out. He's only been knocked out twice in his career, and one of those is Jose Aldo.
Sean, now listen, man. You didn't hear me hedging. I said I could see it maybe going that way, but also a decision. That's a coward's way of picking a fight.
Oh, goodness.
But I could see him getting knocked out.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I agree with what you just said. I mean, watching Kattar, he's such a crisp striker. And I think that is probably going to be the difference. I'm going to take Calvin Kattar as well. I'm going to make it unanimous. And I think it's going to be probably a decision. But I could see a knockout. No, I'm just I think it's going to be a decision.
Yeah. All right. Making it unanimous for that last fight of the card. Heavyweights. Somehow this guy keeps failing upwards and landing on these big spots. There's probably 9 or 10 fights.
About him.
Dude, there's 9 or 10 fights better than this fight on this card. It's so ridiculous. Like, I get it. I get what they're doing.
Yeah.
People know the name Greg Hardy. It's a general audience. I get it, but it's so silly. Greg Hardy, Jorgen De Castro. So my one big question for this pay-per-view opener between these two gentlemen, can Jorgen De Castro become the pandemic's panacea?
I love it. That should be his nickname, by the way.
It might become his nickname, Chuck. It might become his nickname because, look, it's obvious what the UFC wants here, right? This is another Greg Hardy setup so that he can notch like a big KO win on a big stage, piss people off. But Jorgen De Castro, like, he might actually be good, man. Like, we don't know much about him. He's 6-0, 2-0 on the UFC type of properties between Dana White, Contender Series, and the UFC. Both of those were knockouts. With the insane amount of attention that will be paid to this card on Saturday, most likely, Jorgen De Castro has a chance here to legitimately become an actual, like, name that mainstream audiences will know on Saturday. Because if you're the guy, and we've said this for a year now, if you're the guy that goes out there and finally gives people what they want and knocks out Greg Hardy, that's going to go viral as all hell, especially right now, and you're going to give the people the schadenfreude that they're really looking for. And in a time like this, that will be huge. I don't know if Jorgen Castro is that guy, but that certainly seems to be what this fight is about.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because you mentioned, I agree with you 100% on, because this is such a unique setup and all eyes will kind of be on this fight, you know, I think that, you know, it's a lot different setup than maybe when Greg Hardy was fighting Alexander Volkov, who was able to basically win the fight, but not definitively. Like, he wasn't able to just go in there and just plow right through Hardy. And so it didn't really have the feeling that we were talking about, like when we mentioned that. this one feels like, especially just given that you know, the prelims on ESPN, everything else, I just feel like it will be kind of geared towards the attention will be on it. And so, you know what, man? If DeCastro can go in there and get this done, and I think that that's the one thing we know is he's carrying some power, right? Like, he's undefeated. And we know that he, was it Justin Toffa? Was that the guy's name that he beat last time out? And he looked good in that fight. I'm like, if he's able to go in there and kind of do this again, this is a great hurdle moment for him, man. All of a sudden his name is out there and, everybody kind of gets that Greg Hardy moment. Now, I don't know how much, honestly, to be completely honest, I don't know how much people are really, still wondering about this because we've seen so much of Greg Hardy, but I do know that sentiment exists. I know there's a lot of people who'd like to see Hardy get knocked out, and this could be the moment, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know even what to make looking at this matchup, because is it the opportunity for Hardy to just get in there and keep competing, or is it the thing where they're putting him in there to eventually set up a loss? And you know, obviously, like you said, Jorgen De Castro has the power for sure. He's a lot smaller than Greg Hardy, which I think is always going to be an issue. You know, until he gets up to the Ngannous of the division, but. It's a really interesting matchup. It feels like somebody's going to go to sleep. You know, so that, I mean, that's really where we're at with that one.
let's go ahead and make the picks, gentlemen. For me, I think the time will come when people will get what they want. I just don't think it's going to be on Saturday. I think Greg Hardy's second round KO, and we continue on with this sort of narrative. What about you guys?
Yeah, I'm actually agreeing with you on this, and you know, it's now been. Let's see. So he debuted, was that only like, it's only been like 15 or 16 months or something like that, right? Like he's Greg Hardy really hasn't been around all that much time, but he's kind of crammed a lot of experience into a short time. I just don't know enough about DeCastro to be like definitively like, oh, I think he's going to be, you know, match, you know, Greg Hardy's, experience, which is kind of strange to say, but I do think that Hardy has some experience now, just the guys he's been with. And having gone, you know, a few rounds with Volkov and all that stuff, I think maybe he probably has more in his toolbox than we want to give him credit for. So I'm leaning, I guess, with Greg Hardy. And I think that probably, you know, man, every time you kind of think that something the other guy might bring danger, that's when I feel like Hardy shuts it down. So I have a feeling we're in for one of those like first round TKO type victories. So I'm going with Hardy early.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, just looking at the size matchup is really what concerns me. I mean, Hardy has an 80 plus inch reach, and I think DeCastro is 74 inch reach, something like that. And
whoa,
I think he's giving up like 6 inches of height and whatever. And, you know, look, say what you want about Greg Hardy. I think he is dedicated to trying to learn how to be good at this sport. And I think the longer it goes, he is going to acquire more skills. He's got undeniable punching power. Man, I mean, you know what? I'm going to just be the contrarian you guys are going with Greg Hardy. I'm going to take Jorgen De Castro, who knows? And I think the size is going to be a big factor here. I think Greg Hardy can definitely finish this early.
Let's say
Jorgen De Castro, you know, takes a shot.
Laughter.
Let's say he takes a shot to give a shot. And I'll take Jorgen De Castro this one.
All right.
Oh my God.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, there we go. That is UFC 249. To quick recap all of what we just did this week between Monday and Wednesday shows, the overall standings right now for our overall picks. Chris, you're in the lead. You have 11 out of 14.
Yep.
Chuck, me and you are tied in second place, 8 out of 14. But what That's really matters, none of those actually matter though, because what matters is the locks. That's what we're keeping track of. Chris, you're still in the lead. 5 out of 6.
I think I'm doing better with the locks. The thing that really matters.
You are doing better. I'm at 4 out of 6. All right. You're just abusing that button now, sir.
He's the warden.
The warden. I love that. I have 4 out of 6. So I'm on your heels.
Yes.
I can catch you this week. And Chuck, you're down there. 2 out of 6. It's rough sledding for you, man. It seems like you definitely know how to pick fights because you're getting that 8 out of 14, but the locks are what's getting you.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, this week I feel pretty confident. You know what I mean? We'll see if I get back in the game this week.
Just to recap, your locks for this week, Chuck, you have Ryan Spann on the undercard, so you're trying to get one early, first fight of the card. I like that you always try to get one early.
I do, man.
Calm your mind. So you have Ryan Spann and you have Calvin Guitar. I have Vicente Luque on the undercard, and I have Francis Ngannou. Chris,
you have all main cards. So you're going to be waiting a while on this. You have, actually, no, I'm sorry. Fabrizio Verdum's not on the main card.
Yeah, I spoke wrong. Could be, but he's not.
Such a good card. You have Fabrizio Verdum, and you also have Francis Ngannou. And we shall see how the dominoes will fall on Saturday, gentlemen. It is fun to be doing this again. I am really happy that we are back in some level of doing this again. In the meantime, we are running out of time. It is a long show today. It is Wednesday, though, and so we have one order of business left. You already know what it is. It's interim title time, baby. Chuck Mendenhall.
All right.
You handing out your hardware.
You know what, man? I feel like maybe this is the one time that this is, I don't know if it's quite appropriate, but maybe it is. I don't know. But it's like maybe the one time you would give a title to this man, because generally speaking, he's too much in the spotlight, or he's too much the controller of the narrative and everything else. But I got to give it to UFC President Dana White this week, man. You know why? Because here we are in early May and everything is still pretty much on lockdown. And this guy has stood in the firing, you know, in the firing line for a long time, all through the month of April, through every kind of scrutiny and, you know, like in terms of media and things like that, fans, backlash, etc., to put on this event. And somehow, man, he's been able to figure this out. And I truly believe him, man. You know, as much as we, you know, you can pick out the flaws of Dana White and everything else, but he goes for what he believes, man. And this is one of those scenarios where he's just so stubborn, and the UFC is, you know, going to proceed. And I really believe him when he said that, you know, each day that they'd form a plan, the next day the situation would change and they would have to start again and try to get it done. I really believe there was a ton of heavy lifting. And obviously there's a lot of transparency issues that we've been dealing with, and you wish things would go a little differently that way. But he's doing it. This event is happening on Saturday night. And I guess there's like a couple more cards right after that, all within like a 7 or 8 day range. The UFC is proceeding. And for that, man, just on that alone, just being able to accomplish that, I'm going to give Dana White my interim title this week.
Wow. Never thought I'd see the day.
Yeah.
You and Dana have some
credit where it's due, man. But like you said, if it could backfire, we'll see.
Very true. For my interim title of the week, I'm going dual titles today. I am giving my interim title to former co-worker of mine and also a UFC Hall of Famer, Jonathan Snowden and Ken Shamrock. Get my titles today. Former co-worker, as I said, I used to work with Jonathan Snowden. My first ever gig in MMA was on a site called MMA Nation. He was on that staff with me. I've known this guy a long time. He has been working on this biography for Ken Shamrock for years now. He has poured everything into it, his blood, sweat, tears, all of his heart into this. And I know that it's something he cared about a lot. It finally came out this past week. I'm reading and I'm about a fourth of the way through it. But dude, it is tremendous. This Shamrock book is awesome. It covers everything. UWF, Pancrase, UFC, WWF. Like, it's hitting all the notes right now. It is all sorts of insane side streets and crazy stories from the early days. That's my wheelhouse, man. I love the NHB weirdness, the cowboy days, hearing some crazy shit that just used to happen back then. That's what I love. I also keep seeing Dave Meltzer out there, the preeminent wrestling historian, rave about it, which I know is a huge real treat for Jonathan. He grew up reading Dave. So congratulations to Jonathan Stone for not only getting it done, but doing it damn good. This book is really tremendous. I recommend it to everybody. And so for that, I'm giving my interim titles this week to Jonathan Snowden and Ken Shamrock. Well done, boys. Oh, yeah.
You know, I got that in my email box too, man. I'm going to have to pick that up. That's a great endorsement, and good for Jonathan, man. He's one of those cats who sticks with it, and I know he can write, and that's a perfect subject matter for him. So I'll be reading that too.
We could not have handed our interim titles to two more polarizing people, Dana White and Jonathan Snowden. I love it.
Good buddies right there.
Yes, they are big fans of each other. With that, guys, we did it. UFC 249, our preview show's in the books. Fights are on Saturday. The week's about to get going. Picks start picking up. It's going to be a weird one. There's virtual media days. There's no one really knows what's going to happen for weigh-ins. We're going to see it, experience it all. Can't wait. I'm going to enjoy the ride with you fellas. And then Saturday, everybody, tune in on Saturday after the fights. Post-fight show will be up. Probably like an hour after the fights, getting our instant reaction to everything. In the meantime, Hope you everybody enjoys the rest of your week. Stay safe out there. You just got to make it to Saturday. We're going to do it, fellas. In the meantime, that is producer Chris for Chuck Mindenhall. I am Sean Oshadi. We love you guys. Please rate, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We'll catch you guys on Saturday.
Peace.